Good day, everybody. Welcome to the fifth quarter. This episode, I'm John Shomo, your host, by the way. This episode will review a very busy week two in the college football world. We'll talk about a couple of other issues in sport, and then we'll preview a not as busy week three with a few key games, not quite as many as we had in week two. Leading off, first of all, the big match at the Big House, the Texas Longhorns playing the Michigan Wolverines for only the second time in history. It turned out to be not so close, actually. Texas is just better than the Wolverines this year. Quinn Ewers, the former Ohio State, I guess he played two plays there, quarterback, he didn't forget. He called them that team up north all week, and he didn't forget his roots. He played a really good game, really steady game. Michigan's quarterback, Warren, looked like he locks in on Colston Loveland way too much. Not to take anything from Loveland. He's a very, very, very good player at tight end. But it looks like he's looking for him every play, longer than he needs to. And whether it's their wide receivers aren't getting open or what the problem is, they got a problem. And they don't run the ball like they did last year. All new offensive line. I think they're going to struggle some more as the season goes on, and that just thrills me to death. Anyway, Texas looked really good. There was a lot of burnt orange in the Big House up there last Saturday. Big takeoff for them. They have some not-so-tough games until that game in mid-October at the Cotton Bowl against the Sooners, their rivalry game. Moving on, down the road a little bit from Ann Arbor in northern Indiana, was I the guy last week on a podcast that said that Notre Dame pretty much had clinched a playoff spot by their opening week win at Texas A&M? Was I that guy? I might not have been the only guy, but I was that guy. Mea culpa. Northern Illinois Huskies. Boy, that was some game. It was the first ever win by a MAC school over a top five ranked college football team. Ever. Coach Hammock was emotional after the game was over. He has every right to be. Those kids pour their heart and soul into it like kids on all the other teams, too. And that was so meaningful to Northern Illinois and to the MAC in general. Plus, they got on the bus to go back to DeKalb with a $1.4 million check in their hand. Yes, Notre Dame paid $1.4 million to have Northern Illinois come in to South Bend and beat them. How's that for Schadenfreude, I guess you'd say. That was a tremendous upset. I gave an oopsie there. I thought Notre Dame was a lock for the playoff. They've got to win 10 games now. They have not much room for error. With that loss on their resume, things have changed for them. They have to get back good in a hurry. They still have, remember, Florida State and Southern California left on their schedule. If they don't trip up again in some other game, they've got some mediocre opponents that could get them. But that was really something, and it was fun to watch. Otherwise, the Ohio State Buckeyes were really good Saturday night in their win over Western Michigan, held them to 99 total yards offense. The Buckeyes seemingly scoring at will, scored 56 points. Three quarterbacks contributed, throwing touchdown passes. They were sharp from the beginning to the end, no matter who was out there. No matter who was playing quarterback, no matter whether it was first team, second team, whatever it might be, they were very, very good last week and probably will drop from 2 to 3. I think they did in one of the polls with Texas taking over 2. I get that. Texas won a huge game. But I'll tell you what, Ohio State looked sharp, much improved from week one. Other notes from week two real quickly here. Kyle McCord up at Syracuse seems to be thriving. He led a nice win, 31-28 win over Georgia Tech. We know Georgia Tech is pretty good this year from their previous games. So good for Kyle McCord. I'm happy to see him do well up there. He wasn't an exact fit in the offense that Ryan Day envisioned at Ohio State. He still had a heck of a good year in 2023. Lost one game by 6 points to the eventual national champs. Of course, they kind of knew it was coming sometimes. But Kyle McCord, good for him. Keep on going up there. Nebraska manhandled Colorado. They kind of eased up in the second half. They didn't play very well in the second half, but they had a 28-0 lead at halftime and coasted. The Colorado team, I got to say, whether you like Coach Prime or not, That's the most dysfunctional college football team I've seen in 20 years or so. I'm thinking back to the Miami shenanigans back in the 1990s and early 2000s. They are out of control. They're leaving the game, players leaving the game, the sideline to the locker room before the game's over. Players screaming at other players as they come off the field. It's a shit show, for lack of a better term. And I'm not so sure they're going to win four games this year. It's a travesty, really. Good for Nebraska, though. Looks like they're back and competitive. And I think college football's better when they are. So good for them. The local teams, okay. Akron played decent. They played hard in the first half at Rutgers. It seems like they're trying out for Big Ten status. Again, it was competitive at halftime, and they got beat badly in the second half, like what happened to them in Columbus week one. They now play their FCS opponent, Akron does this week, Colgate, before venturing out one more time into the land of the Giants. Week four, they go down to Columbia to play South Carolina. Kent State, meanwhile, had their FCS game at home at Dick Stadium this past Saturday. It was a $300,000 payday for St. Francis, their FCS opponent. And St. Francis, much like Northern Illinois, put the check in their pocket, got back on the bus, and rode home happy as a winner. Kent State was defeated by FCS St. Francis. Not a good omen for them. It only gets tougher for the Flashes. Okay, my picks, let's see. The first week, week one, wasn't so good. I went 1-2-1 in my picks. Last week, we tried to pick six games. Texas, got that one. Tennessee, got that one. They won big over North Carolina State, by the way. Oregon, I picked them to cover. They did not cover. They had a tough time holding off Boise State, one on a last-second field goal. Iowa, surprisingly, gave up 20 points and lost 20-19 to Iowa State, lost the Cy Hawk trophy, missed that one. Nebraska, I had covering and winning. They won and covered. And Syracuse, I had winning. So we were 4-2 in week two. That moves us to 5-4-1 on the season in our picks. We'll try to pick four more games here before we let you go today. Okay, a couple of other issues in the sport before we look at week three. Why the 2-minute timeout? I did some reading on this. The reason they call it the 2-minute timeout, and they're so insistent on it in the college games, telling the broadcasters not to say 2-minute warning, etc., is because, and this is the version that college football puts out. I'm just kind of going with their version here. There are different timing rules in college football now in the final 2 minutes of each half. They've relaxed the rules earlier. For instance, with 10 minutes to go in the first quarter, if a team gets a first down, they're not stopping the clock even temporarily anymore. They're letting the clock roll. There are different timing rules in the last 2 minutes of each half. So when they stop the clock with 2 minutes to go in the first half, 2 minutes to go in the game, they are resetting and reminding one another that the timing rules now have changed. That's their explanation. Okay, you can decide whether it's kind of weak or not, but that's their explanation. The National Football League, I did find this out, uses the term warning. They have used the warning term since the 1940s, when in most cases time, the official time, was kept on the field by the referees. A lot of the stadiums back in the 1940s didn't have a visible running clock on the scoreboard. So time was kept on the field, and when they got to 2 minutes or the play ended at nearest to 2 minutes, they would stop the game and warn both benches that there were 2 minutes to play. That's a tradition that's continued, even though now the whole world knows how much time is left in an NFL game. So there, that's the scoop, if you will, on why college football is insisting on calling that new rule the 2-minute timeout rather than the 2-minute warning. I'll go along with their explanation there. Also, rumors of a coaching change. Wow. According to the famous Bennett Sports Report from Houston, rumors of Jimbo Fisher moving back to Florida State. Could it be? As you may know, Jimbo Fisher was the coach down there, won a national championship there in 2013 with Jameis Winston at the helm. Do they want Jimbo to come back and run it back in Tallahassee? Well, we'll see. Mike Norvell's still there. They have game number three coming up this weekend. As you know, Florida State's 0-2, and not much of a pulse left in terms of the playoff. We'll see how the rest of the season goes. Can he right the ship and get them to win a few games in a row? If not, could Jimbo, who's collecting big-time money, by the way, from Texas A&M still, even in his leisure time now, would he be willing to go back and take over the helm of the Seminoles? That's an interesting what-if. Depends on how FSU plays starting this week. Okay. Now we move on to week three upcoming here as we record this on Monday afternoon. A few games of interest. This is probably maybe the weakest schedule week of the season. They like to pack some real good games into week one. There were some good ones, as we've noted, in week two. Maybe a little less in week three. Week four, we start getting into conference play in earnest. So that's when the schedule really beefs up for most teams. But week three has a few gems. One of them is the 107th meeting between the backyard brawl rivals, the West Virginia Mountaineers and the Pitt Panthers. The Mountaineers will travel the 75 miles or so up Interstate 79 to Pittsburgh and play at Acrisure Stadium. West Virginia won last year in Morgantown 17-6. This, I think, is the third of a four-year contract renewing this rivalry. As I said, this is the 107th meeting. It's pretty fierce. I grew up on stories of West Virginia and Pitt from my dad and my uncles. The series, by the way, is 62 for Pitt, 41 for West Virginia, and three ties. It's pretty fierce. If the Mountaineers win in Pittsburgh, there will be a whole lot of crazy Mountaineers frequenting, let's say, businesses in the Pittsburgh area after that game. So we'll see how that goes. Will I pick that game? We'll see here in a minute. Notre Dame travels to Purdue. That's really interesting. Usually when they get together, they aren't called the spoiler makers for nothing. There have been several moments in the history of college football where Purdue has wrecked Notre Dame national championship hopes. They don't play every year, but it's a pretty close by, pretty fierce rivalry. How will the Irish respond to what happened to them in South Bend last weekend? The Boilers, you know, they had a bye last week. They have been plotting and would love to pull the upset over the Irish. The crowd will be pretty stoked there in West Lafayette. My son and I went to a game there last October to watch the Buckeyes. Let's see if they light that place up like they have in the past a few times for the Irish. That's an interesting one to me. Will I pick that one? Yeah, we'll make a pick on that one later. Also, this is kind of sad. It'll be the last time the 128th meeting, and evidently the last meeting, between the two close-by rivals in southwestern Ohio, the Cincinnati Bearcats and the Miami Redhawks. They'll play at Oxford this weekend. Again, their contract has been terminated by both sides. I don't know really why that is, but Cincinnati and Miami, again, they've played 127 times. The 128th this Saturday may be it. The series record, 60 wins for the Bearcats, 60 wins for Miami, and seven ties. So this is really, there's a lot at stake in that one. The winner will get to rest on their laurels for however long it takes them to get together again. I know a few Miami of Ohio graduates. They're pretty stoked up, I'm sure, for that one. Maybe a couple of them will travel down there. Who knows? Locally, our local teams here, week three, Ohio State has their first of two byes. Remember, every team gets two byes this year. Ohio State will be off this week. The Akron Zips will be at home, as I said, to FCS school Colgate, downtown Akron. Go see the game if you've got a chance. Kent State will cash in a check of some value. They are traveling to Knoxville to play the Tennessee Volunteers. And, oh, man, did Tennessee look tough in their routing of North Carolina State last week. That could get ugly quick right there. Okay. Now for our picks. Here we go. We're going to do four games this week. We did six last week. There were a few more good games, as I said, last week. First of all, West Virginia at Pitt. Pitt is 2.5-point favorites. I'll go with West Virginia. I'll pick the Mountaineers. My relatives wouldn't let me do anything else. So go Mountaineers. Cincinnati at Miami. Miami's 2.5 point underdog. Go Red Hawks. I'd like to see Miami win, and I'll predict that they will at least cover the 2.5 point spread. Notre Dame at Purdue. We talked about that a few minutes ago. Purdue are 12.5 point underdogs at home. I've seen that movie before. I think that's going to be a very close game. Purdue will be hyped. They'll be ready. They've been looking at Notre Dame tape for 2 weeks. I think they're a little better than they were last year. Let's see if Purdue can do it. I picked them to cover. Maybe not win it outright, but they could. But 12.5 is a lot of points in that rivalry. Finally, we'll go out to the West Coast for the famous Big Ten matchup between Indiana and UCLA. Yes, that's a Big Ten conference game now. They'll play at night at the Rose Bowl. UCLA are 3-point favorites in that one. Oh, 3-point underdogs, pardon me. The interesting thing about that is the last time Indiana played at the Rose Bowl was New Year's Day 1968, after the 1967 season, when they were last Big Ten co-champions. They went out and lost to USC and a junior running back by the name of Orenthal James Simpson in that Rose Bowl. They're back in 2024 playing the UCLA Bruins. Indiana, a 3-point favorite on the road at the Rose Bowl. Let's go with the Big Ten team there. I'll circle Indiana for that one. Even though I probably should think better of ever betting on the Indiana Hoosiers in football. Let's see if they can pull it off. Okay, that'll do it for this week's edition of the Fifth Quarter. Kind of light week coming up, so we'll wrap it up now. If you have any comments or questions, please feel free to send them to me here at 3goodquestions@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled out, T-H-R-E-E, goodquestions@gmail.com. We'd be happy to entertain any questions or comments that you may have. Thanks for choosing us. Thanks for tuning in. This is your host, John Shomo. This is the Fifth Quarter. Hopefully your team does well this weekend, and have a good week, everybody. Thanks for listening.